Hi, this is Debbie Voiles, coach at Mojo for Running, with episode number 137, Boston. Welcome to the Mojo for Running podcast. I'm the coach, Debbie Voiles, and this is the podcast for middle of the packers, regular people not afraid to work up a sweat, who embrace the outdoors and that wonderful feeling of endorphins surging through their veins. My goal is to provide the information you need to achieve your goals. As many of you know, I did the Boston Marathon this year, just a couple of months ago. Even after 42 years of running and 10 years doing marathons, it was beyond thrilling. And today, I'm excited to share the whole experience with you. But first, I want to congratulate all of you participating in my Mojo for Running Plank Challenge that I started the day the last episode about planks went live. As I record this, it is day 18 of the challenge. People are participating all over the world, and I love reading your comments and seeing your photos. I've shared pictures of people planking in airports, at jury duty, with their dogs, with their grandkids, at the beach, in London, Australia, and more. Keep the photos coming. Just post them on the Mojo for Running Facebook wall in the comments under that day's challenge post, or post them on your own Instagram wall and tag Mojo for Running Plank Challenge and tag it. If you didn't participate, don't let that keep you from doing it. Start today. You don't need to be on the same day as the rest of the people. Quite a few people have started along the way. The idea is to do a plank for 1 minute for 30 days. And if you can't do 1 minute in the beginning, you work up to it over the first few days. And then at the end of the first 30 days from the day I posted it, I'll post a photo, or actually a picture, a graphic of a trophy with the words 30-day plank challenge finisher for you to share on your wall or anywhere on social media, or for you to print. So even if you start the challenge even today, you'll still have access to that when you finish. So the idea is you post somewhere under one of my posts about the challenge that you're starting that day, and then share that on your wall. That'll help you with accountability, because then everybody knows you've committed to do it. Then when you finish, you can share your finisher photo there. It's been great fun. We have people all over the world doing it, and I hope you'll want to participate. For accountability, you can still post on the Mojo wall under the original announcement that you're doing it and the date that you're started. I hope, too, that you'll all consider supporting this podcast by committing to an amount to contribute each time a new podcast is published. If you think it's worth $1 or $2, then please go to patreon.com/coachdeb. You will only be charged when a new episode is published, and you can cancel at any time. That is the only way this podcast is supported. And while you're on my Patreon page, there's a button to share it. I hope you will. It's Patreon, that's patreon.com/coachdeb. Now, let's talk about the Boston Marathon. I savored every moment of this event, every moment of the weekend. To be clear now, I had done it once before with a charity bib in 2008. And I recall that the whole time I kept telling myself, I will qualify to do this one day. Now, just for a second, let's pause and talk about what makes Boston unique. And we need to talk about the whole qualifying thing, because some people aren't familiar with that. For the most part, I'm very much in favor of everybody having equal access to all races. But I also respect and favor the idea of having some events for the best athletes in any sport. And that's the essence of Boston. If you haven't been racing long or haven't done the large famous races, you might not be aware of the challenge to participate in some of the more popular races, such as the New York City Marathon, Chicago, the Marine Corps Marathon, the Peachtree 10K in Atlanta, and others. Not all are marathons, but all are hard to get into, very hard. Most of the most popular marathons now use a lottery system to make sure entry is fair to everyone. You register and then cross your fingers that you are one of the ones who gets in. For other events, you know that you must be seated at your computer when registration opens and hope that you're one of the lucky few to get in during the few hours before the race's full. There are races that fill up in 1 hour from the time registration opens. Then, there are a few races you have to qualify for, meaning you have to have a qualifying time from another race, such as the case with Boston. Although this fact is well known to most marathoners, I mention it because over the last year I've been in conversations with many people who had no idea that you had to qualify to run the Boston Marathon. Boston is different from any other race. It is the marathon, the epitome of the marathon in the U.S. Every year, the Boston Marathon Association publishes the qualifying standards for that year. That means the time you must earn in order to even try to enter. Sometimes they're the same as the prior year. In fact, most years they have been. But some years, as this year, the times are dropped. For 2020, the time was dropped by 5 minutes from what it was when I qualified last year. So the time standard, I mean, that is required to apply is now 5 minutes faster for everyone, men and women in every age group. The way it works, put simply, is that you must get the qualifying time prior to the registration for next year's Boston Marathon. And registration is always one day in mid-September for the next event, which is always on Patriots Day in April. If you get the qualifying time after September, it qualifies you for the following year, assuming it meets the standard for that year. Now, let me explain, though, that Boston uses a rolling registration. In other words, it's not just a matter of qualifying. That's not enough, not anymore. It used to be that if you had the qualifying time, you could register. But over the years, it got to where too many people were actually eligible. Too many people had the qualifying time for the number of people that they were going to allow into the race. So what happened was that some people that had faster times than others were getting shut out. They would try to register, but the race would fill up, and some of the fastest people didn't get in. To remedy that situation, the Boston Athletic Association changed the process to what's called rolling admission in 2012. This ensures that the fastest runners will always get in. During the first week of registration, the fastest people can register, and then they open it up to the next fastest group, and so on. Then a few days later, you find out whether you got in. All this guarantees that this one race is a showcase for the fastest runners, and it means that it always will be, because they can always adjust the times, the qualifying standards, like they did this year for 2020, to make it a little bit harder. The qualifying times differ for men and women and for the different age groups. So if you want a BQ, you can't just shoot for the qualifying time. You have to target a time that's about 20 minutes faster if you want to be sure you'll get in. The fastest age group is the youngest one, 18 to 34. And if you're curious about it, you cannot register if you're under 18. Just to give you an idea, for women, it's 3 hours and 30 minutes. And for men, it's 3 hours. That's for 2020. On the other hand, for women in the 65 to 69 age group, my age group, the qualifying time is 4 hours and 35 minutes for women and 4 hours and 5 minutes for men. Now, if you're much younger and say, oh man, that's a cinch, please think again. There's a reason why it gets slower over the years as you get older. Just wait until you put in that many more years on your body. It's not easier. Just ask any longtime marathoner, and that person will tell you that it gets harder every year, no matter how well you take care of your body or train. Anyway, last year, I qualified with a time of 4:24:28, and at that time, the qualifying time was, the qualifying standard for my age group, 65 and up, was 4:40. Now, actually, last year, I was 64, but the way it works is you qualify for the time for the age that you will be on race day. So I was, the qualifying time for the 65 and up last year was 4:40. So 4:24:28, my time, gave me a very good cushion. So I was thrilled when I had that race because I knew that meant I would be able to get in. Qualifying took more years than I had planned or expected, but I did qualify, and this time I was determined to truly experience and savor everything. As I explained on a recent episode, when I did it the first time, it was only my second marathon and only 3 months after my first, and I had shin splints, and I was offered the bib only 3 weeks before the race. Now let me explain that. A certain number of bibs are made available to charities. This raises millions for great causes. If you're interested in doing so, go to the Boston Athletic Association website to discover the charities. Even this is not a guarantee because more people want to raise money than there are charity bibs, and it's not 100 or so, it's thousands you must raise. That said, this system works very well and supports many great charities throughout the U.S. So that is how I ran the first time. I was on the board of a running club that had given money to a charity, and for that reason, that charity gave my club a bib. It doesn't normally work that way. People had signed up to raise money to earn the bibs for that charity, but someone had not done the fundraising, therefore they had a bib left over, and they gave it to us because our club had contributed more money than was needed for the bib. Of course, I happily said, yes, I'll take it. But not being a seasoned marathoner and not being trained for a marathon at that point, the challenge for me was just being able to finish. Fast forward to now. I've done many marathons now, so I've got that down, meaning this time I was confident and able to appreciate just how special the experience is and how many people would never appreciate how many people would never get the chance to participate. So I felt like I was appreciating it extra or trying to for all of them, for all of you who might not get to do it. This time I was able to focus on the city, the people, and the race, every element, the whole process, and all the traditions, the culture of the Boston Marathon. One thing runners must deal with every year at that race is the unpredictable New England weather. As you probably heard, the weather the prior year for the 2018 race was terrible, with many people dropping out due to hypothermia. It was cold, rainy, and windy. They knew it would be, but no one expected the conditions to be as bad as they were. There was so much rain that water was standing in Athletes Village, meaning runners couldn't relax and wait on the grass without sitting in the freezing cold rainwater. So they stood in freezing cold water for as much as 2 hours before starting the race, and then started the race in wet shoes with freezing cold, numb toes. But it got worse. It was very cold and windy and raining during the race. Extreme conditions. Now, I don't mean chilly, drizzling, and breezy. I mean cold, raining, and windy. Let me give you an overview of race day. Runners arrive at Boston Common several hours before the race is to begin. And of course, there are several waves, so several different starting times. Once at Boston Common, you deliver your gear check bag to a particular school bus. The buses are numbered with the numbers that correspond to your race bib. Volunteers lean out of the bus windows and you just toss them your bag, a bag you've been given at the expo that has your race bib number on it. After the race, those buses will be beyond the finish line. I had packed one long sleeve shirt and long pants and underwear. That was about it, and as it turned out, that was not enough. Learning experience. I'll remember that if I get to do it again. Runners also are allowed to have a second, smaller, clear plastic bag to carry on the bus and into Athletes Village in Hopkinton, where the race begins. Remember, this is a point-to-point race. It starts in Hopkinton, and you ride a bus with the other athletes to get there, then you run back to Boston. After delivering my gear bag, I headed over to the line for the buses, where I waited for about 10 minutes for my bus. During the weeks leading up to Boston, many people at home wished me well, often adding, "I hope you have better weather than last year." I would always say, "We have to. It couldn't be worse," which I really believed. I mean, what was the chance that the weather would be that bad 2 years in a row? But in fact, that was the precise prediction a week before the race. Seriously, a few days before the race, the Boston Athletic Association started advising runners to focus more on safety than speed. They said the weather was, in fact, expected to be worse than last year. So, the last week before the race became planning week, with everyone trying to figure out the best way to deal with wet, cold, and windy conditions. I was in two Facebook groups with people doing this year's race, but a high percentage of the members had also done last year's race. Those people then proved to be a critical resource, offering all kinds of insight. Now, consider that I was born and have lived all of my life in Tampa, Florida. If it's below 60 degrees, I'm cold. If it's in the 40s, I don't even want to go outside. I am a cold weather baby, I admit it. When I go to visit my son in San Francisco, I wear long pants and a jacket, even in the summer. So, my attitude once I heard about the forecast was to be pragmatic. Plan, 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 and not worry beyond that. It was Boston, and if it was 2 degrees, I would still be thrilled to be there. I would not let weather dampen my spirits. I participated in discussions of the Facebook group, and I took notes. In the end, I purchased plastic shoe covers recommended because it was critical to avoid standing in freezing cold water pre-race. One of the main discussions was whether to wear a jacket or not. We all know that no matter how cold it is, even a $200 high-tech running jacket will get hot, too hot, after a few miles. And of course, the problem with that is that you can't ditch a $200 jacket. The other option would be some kind of cheap poncho or even a trash bag. For me, I actually keep a trash bag pre-cut with holes for my head and arms in my suitcase. So whenever I travel to a race, that's always with me. But since I knew ahead of time what the weather would be like, I could do better this time. Of the options, I decided to go with the poncho. I could carry it carefully folded up, tucked in my running bra. Someone advised against the super thin ones because they would stick to your arms, which would be hot. Made sense. So I bought a heavier weight one, which happened to be blue, my favorite color. Then, the day before I left, someone in the Facebook group reminded everyone that if we wore a poncho, for security reasons, race officials would require it to be clear. Darn it! I went back out and bought a clear one. This time it was one of the thinner ones, but I didn't have time to shop around at that time. My shoe covers arrived, and I was thrilled that they fit nicely, even over my Hokas. Perfect. Someone in the Facebook group said to be sure to get hand warmers, and that we could get them at Dick's Sporting Goods. But they didn't have them here, explaining that they don't ever carry them this far south, not even in the wintertime. Now, I normally wear cheap $2 gloves in a cold race, but if it rained, that wouldn't be much help, because, of course, they aren't waterproof, not for $2. People in the Facebook group advised to wear latex gloves and put them on the inside, because if they were on the outside of other gloves, water would run inside. Well, the last few weeks before the race were pretty hectic for me, and even in some ways scary. For example, I ended up being in the emergency room with a family member 3 times during the last several weeks. The week before the race was the last time. I went with my 90-year-old mom to the emergency room because she had this horrible, horrible rash. My brother had actually taken her to a different emergency room a few days before, and they didn't believe it was shingles. They just gave her some medication and sent her home, because she wasn't in pain. Anyway, over the next few days, she started to have pain. She started to get weaker. So I took her to the emergency room, and I ended up spending much of that day in the ER with my mom. It took them even then another 48 hours to actually diagnose it as shingles. But since I had it 2 years before, I diagnosed it from the beginning. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is, I was in the ER with my mom for most of the day. And the whole time I was there, I kept eyeing the little box of latex gloves attached to the wall. I wanted a pair. Every time a nurse came in, they grabbed a pair as if it was nothing and I just kept thinking, I want some of those. I need some. I coveted them. But it didn't seem right to take any, so I didn't. But a couple of days before the race, a couple of days after that, I saw my chiropractor, Dr. Maria. When we discussed the weather forecast for my race, she turned around and grabbed a whole handful of those latex gloves and pressed them into my fist. I will always love her even more for that small gesture. By 48 hours pre-race, the forecast had actually improved dramatically. Now the prediction was that it would rain on the early waves, but it wouldn't rain during the first half of my race. Relieved, I knew I would likely still be uncomfortably cold and maybe a little bit wet or damp, but I was ready and I knew it wouldn't be too bad. I decided to go with short sleeves and shorts, a hat, gloves, and the clear poncho, which I wouldn't need until halfway through the race, so it would stay folded. I hadn't even taken it out of the original pack. It would stay folded and in my bra. I gave the blue heavier poncho to my hubby, David, who of course didn't have one, and hadn't given it a thought. He had brought an umbrella, but it turned out to be far too windy for that. What struck me the whole time I was in Boston was how much the whole city of Boston owns that race. I feel like, from what I know, Boston has always been a city with a strong identity. They love their city. But I feel like the Boston bombings intensified that. They love their city and they take pride in their marathon. Wherever I went all weekend, people were excited about the race. And I loved that people everywhere wore Boston Marathon jackets. Not just the ones for this year's race, which of course were ubiquitous, but you'd see people with jackets from 10 years ago, 20 years ago, even 30 years ago. And during the race, people cheering along the race course wore jackets from the year they had done it. It felt like an incredible fraternity, and now I was a member. When I arrived at the expo at the Heinz Center, the line was 100 people long, but it moved quite fast, which was an indication of the ease at which officials would handle the crowds all weekend. I never waited long anywhere. There was a practiced, thoughtful system for everything, and it worked. I met up with my friend Britt, and we perused the expo together, catching up, since she had moved away a year before. That just made the experience that much better. I bought two shirts that day. One said, right on Harrisford, left on Boylston. One for me and one for my best friend Sandy, an ultra runner, who was caring for my dog while I was gone. I loved the photos she'd send me. She has 5 dogs, all very well behaved, and I cherish the pictures of the dogs lined up sitting on the couch with my Bailey right in the middle. I knew he was having as much fun as I was. Well, maybe almost. Most runners won't wear a shirt from a race that they didn't do, but Sandy has done Boston a few times, so I knew she'd wear it. When Britt and I got outside, someone I'd never met caught sight of my Run Tampa shirt, and it turned out to be 2 new club members who had just joined days before. I hadn't even met them yet, so it was amazing that I happened to run into them and meet them in Boston. Perfect timing. We all 4 headed out to meet the other Run Tampa peeps for lunch, and along the way, of course, we stopped for photos with the iconic BAA sign and photos at the finish line as well, with the famous unicorn logo on the street. I was wearing my new Boston Marathon jacket already, as were probably half the people we were passing. Race morning, in the drizzling rain, David walked me to the Boston Commons, which is a park where it all starts, where you catch the bus, wearing the blue poncho, by the way. As I made my way between the buses, the first thing I noticed was people with big bags over their shoes, making do because they didn't have the nifty little zip-on shoe covers that I had. But it was all great. I found the bus collecting the gear check bags for my bib number and tossed them in my bag, then headed for the bus that would take me to Athletes Village in Hopkinton. It was dreary and drizzly, but it never poured, not where I was. By the time we arrived, I realized everyone's weather fears were probably pretty much unfounded. And what people had described as a 2-hour wait only turned out to be 45 minutes for me. Just enough time to use the porta potty, grab a cup of hot coffee, which they were serving in the tent, and relax. I had brought a big trash bag to sit on to protect me from wet grass, but as it turned out, the people in the earlier waves had left plenty of those on the ground already. I stretched out, shot a video, and before I knew it, it was time to go. Literally, the only bad thing that happened to me all morning was the yelling at people for being on the sidewalk where they weren't supposed to be. And by yelling, I mean the announcer. The whole time I was in the tent, he kept yelling at people for walking somewhere where they weren't supposed to be. I don't even know where they were because I was in the tent where I was supposed to be. Anyway, before I knew it, they called my wave. I cast aside my throwaways, a sweatshirt and sweatpants, and the awesome shoe covers, and started the 0.7-mile walk to the starting line. And by the way, all the discarded clothes are provided to homeless shelters. I stopped to take pictures with some police officers along the way and with an adorable group of high school girls lined up in chairs in a driveway singing along to the theme from Rocky, which they had blaring from a boombox. I said to them, "Hey, can I take a video of you all singing?" "Sure," they said. I started my video, but just then they stopped singing and one explained that they don't know the words except for the chorus. We all laughed and then waited for the chorus. I'll put this video in the show notes with the pictures of the volunteers. By this time, I was not at all concerned about the weather. It was in the 60s, perfectly comfortable, very overcast, just absolutely perfect racing weather for me. When the race started, it was crowded, but it wasn't too bad. One person did lose his balance and slam into me, but I managed to avoid going down. Mainly, I just tried to soak up the fact that I was there and that I had qualified to be there this time. I kept my pace exactly to my race plan, and I felt great. The rolling hills were no problem. The first half was uneventful, but by the time I reached about the 10-mile mark, the sun was out, and it was warming up quite a bit. No problem for me. By not mile 14, though, it was hot. I mean, hot. Some people, maybe 1 in 20, were wearing long sleeves and long pants. I guess they hadn't noticed that the prediction for the weather had gotten better over the last 48 hours before the race. That was a super idea, a super bad idea. In fact, it's always a bad idea to wear long sleeves on the outside. If they're If you wear long sleeves on the inside, you're stuck. If they're on the outside, you can take them off. Anyway, I worried that they would overheat, and pretty soon I saw some people walking, apparently from being too hot. I was grateful that I had chosen short sleeves and shorts. That was okay, but I didn't need the hat, and I had taken off the gloves at the race start and tucked them under the shoulder straps of my running bra. Now I was super hot and looking to shed whatever I could. I looked up at the beautiful, now cloudless sky and thought, there is no way it's going to be bad weather and raining during the last half of this race just an hour from now. So I cast my gloves aside along with the clear poncho that I had tucked in my bra. I had never even unfolded it. I'll share my hydration plan. Since I'm fat adapted and hadn't been consuming nutrition on my long runs, I didn't eat breakfast. I had electrolyte capsules and Good Day energy candies, which each have, I think it's 4 grams of carbs, 20 grams of caffeine, B vitamins, and vitamin D. These look like big M&Ms. They're candy-coated chocolate, no preservatives or chemicals, and non-GMO. I eat them for the steady feed of caffeine. I have no idea if the B vitamins are benefiting me or not. I consume one of those and one electrolyte capsule about every 45 to 55 minutes. That has worked great for me for over a year, so I stuck with it in the race. For hydration, I drank water at every other water stop. The key is to practice this on all your long runs and study your body's performance and response. For me, that combination has worked great. I loved passing through the quaint neighborhoods, people lining the streets, whole families, making an all-day party out of the event. Hopkinton, Ashland, Framingham, Natick, Wellesley, Newton, and then on to those two famous streets, Harrisford and Boylston, at the end. Some families had turned their whole yard into a party, many providing their own aid station for us. My race was going great until about the halfway point. The weather was beautiful, too. But a few miles later, my hips started to give me trouble, the familiar twinge I'd been struggling with for months. It wasn't bad, but it was worrisome, and with every mile it got worse. By mile 18, I was having to stop and walk to give the hip a chance to calm down. I say the hip. I will expand. It's not the bone. The bones in my hips are great, the doctor says. It's some kind of inflammation, whether it's piriformis or upper hamstring. It's really not clear. In fact, I'm not sure it's not both. But it's not terrible. It's just that I can't get it to completely resolve. I was super bummed because otherwise I felt good, had plenty of energy, and my pace was great when I was running, but of course the walking intervals slowed me down quite a lot, so my time wasn't nearly what it should have been. Anyway, that wasn't the most important thing in this race. Around mile 20, the weather suddenly turned bad. It got much colder in only a matter of minutes. It started raining, and the wind kicked up. It was freezing. I was freezing. The wind and cold cutting through the single layer of my shirt. But I had tossed my poncho aside an hour before. I couldn't believe it. I had been so prepared, had purchased 2 ponchos. But now, when I needed it, I had neither. And of course, I had also discarded my gloves. I started looking around for a plastic bag and spied 2 bags, but they were on the other side of barriers and each was half full of used paper cups. There must have been an unofficial water stop at that spot earlier in the day. I got the attention of a lady walking by and asked her to hand me the bags. She looked at me like I was crazy and said, "They're full of trash." I explained that I put all the trash in one bag and wear the other. Yes, I was that desperate. I didn't want to be that cold and uncomfortable for another hour. Then I spotted an empty bag blowing around behind her on the ground and asked her for that one. I tore a hole in it for my head and put it on. It wasn't much of a bag and was already ripped down one side, but a half mile later I found a second one and that was tied to a barrier and I snagged that. Now, with 2 bags, I was feeling a little more comfortable. Looking ridiculous, I suspect, but I felt much better. A couple miles later, the rain stopped and I ditched the bags. The crowds were growing as we neared the finish and the endorphins increased with every single mile. Dave and I had planned to connect at the next to last turn. I was sad when I didn't see him there, but a moment later, I caught sight of him at the last turn. That was just exactly what I needed at that moment. We've been together for 50 years, and all that time, looking into his eyes has been giving me strength and enhanced every experience. I was happy he was there and that, even if I couldn't get to him for a hug, our eyes met, a virtual hug. I ran toward the finish line, euphoric, and when I crossed that timing mat, I thought of all the people tracking me, sharing the experience in that way. Once, on the other side of the finish line, I felt like I had walked into a hurricane. I now understand what is meant by a nor'easter. The wind was crazy and it was super cold. I took my time, though, thinking that I might never have that opportunity to be there again, and I wanted to take in everything. Finally, I moved on, accepted my medal, and headed for the buses and the bag I had checked. The medal is stained glass, the most beautiful medal I've ever put around my neck. And I've done about 300 races, so that's a lot of medals. I hung it from the handle on one of my kitchen cabinets, and it's still there, looking beautiful as the light shines through it. Eventually, it will move into my office, but for a while, it will remain right where it is. That's it. It was magical. If you have the dream to qualify for Boston, go for it. But be patient. It might take a few tries, but stick to it. Like everything, the harder the journey, the more satisfied the arrival at the destination. Learn from every race. Hone your skills. Tweak your training. Eat a healthy diet. Monitor all aspects of your health. Listen to your body. Stay focused and surround yourself with people who believe you can do it. Every time I stepped on a timing mat during that race, my Run Tampa family was stepping on it with me. And that just made it that much more important to me. In the next episode, I'll share a great tip, actually a couple of great tips about accountability, a couple of my accountability secrets. I hope you're following me on Instagram and Twitter at Mojo for Running, and of course in the Mojo for Running Facebook group. If you live in the Tampa area or visit here, I hope you'll come and see me and run with Run Tampa. You can find out about Run Tampa and see lots of pictures at runtampa.com. And I sure hope you have all had a chance to watch our documentary, The Human Race. It's available on Amazon and iTunes for just a few dollars. And now, here's today's quote. "You will get there when you are meant to get there, and not one moment sooner. So relax, breathe, and be patient. I don't know who said that. I would add to that, enjoy all the moments before you get there.